I'm going to be talking today mostly from the material found in my book on learning meditation, and some of you have read it. But I'm going to be able to go into much more depth than I could in the book, more relevance for you. To begin with, I would say that most everyone who begins meditating has learned how to do it with a set of instructions, that very few people have just sat down and tried on their own to meditate. And if you had done that, if you just sat down and just tried to do it without any instructions, you probably created instructions for yourself, because that's what we do. And what instructions do in meditation is they provide us with a particular kind of structure. They give us a sense of that there's something to do in meditation, that there's a particular task, and that there's a particular way to do it. And most of the instructions we get coming from the outside are from people who found certain things that work for them in meditation, or found, some particular way of meditating that they felt should be done all of the time. And the question around that always comes up is, is somebody else's practice actually really your practice? You know, it may be relevant for you, it may be helpful to know what others have done, but is your mind, is your way of meditating going to match somebody else's? And I would say that we're quite unique in this respect. I mean, there will be similarities, but each of us is coming to meditation with our own background, our own history, our own psychology, our own biology, our own genetics, our own orientation. We're not coming to it with the same material. We're not starting in the same place. Everybody doing the same instruction is not going to necessarily match each individual. So the way I look at meditation, especially as one continues to meditate, is that you generally have learned certain instructions that were given in situations where you just do this instruction, or you were given certain strategies or formulas, a series of instructions, one to follow another. No doubt you've done those, and you've tried to have that be your meditation practice, and maybe it's been very successful, very beneficial at times, and other times it's been frustrating and difficult and not all that satisfying. And what happens with many people with meditation when they feel frustrated with the instructions is they think that it's their fault, that you've failed the meditation practice, you're not a good meditator, when actually I would say the instructions have failed you. They're just not suitable for where you are at that point in time. So what I'm going to present today, and what we'll look at, is what is really suitable for you. What is, for you in your own meditation practice where you are, what are directions or ways of certain ways of bringing your attention or working with your attention or working with whatever comes up in your sittings that really are congruent to where you are today, instead of trying to do something which is not possible to do today that would just create more frustration and struggle. So I really do believe, from having heard thousands of meditators talk about their sittings over the years, that people do have a lot of struggle with instructions, and that instructions can get in the way of meditation practice. And so that's the subtitle, my book is, you know, what to do when the instructions get in the way. And basically, you can't just drop them. You can't just say, well, I'm not going to do these instructions. One reason for that is because you've probably become habituated to them. They've become habits of mind. You've become, attached to them in certain ways, or they've become attached to you, however you want to look at it. And it's not then about trying to stop doing certain instructions. It's about understanding how you're doing them and kind of disentangling from some of the unwanted habits of mind, from things that have come up in your meditation practice that may not be all that useful or all that beneficial at this point, which are actually tied into some of the instructions you're using. And one of the main areas that meditators find that become not very useful is when the instructions become things to measure yourself by, when they become things that lead to judgments and self-criticism. And so you may find that you're not just, a judgmental person. You know, you're not just making judgments about yourself as being not very good, or judgments about what you should be thinking about and what you shouldn't be thinking about. You're actually, following certain things you've heard, certain instructions you've received. And you can question those instructions. You can question anything. You can question anything I'm saying as well during the day. Because also I believe that looking at the nature of meditation practice, we need to also be able to have some questions about what it is we're hearing, what we've been taught, and what I'm teaching and presenting. So let me just say a few things about instructions, just to give you a better sense of what's going on when you practice with instructions. That meditation instructions are not instructive, first of all. They're not there to actually teach something. They're actually rules. They are things that you're supposed to follow. And so when people learn meditation, what they often learn is that they have to follow a set of prescribed rules around experience. Even if the rules are not explicitly stated in the instruction, we will tend to add the rule. We will put the rule in. So, for example, say you received the instruction to always bring your attention back to the breath whenever your mind wanders. Very common instruction. Now, within that instruction, there's a rule that says, basically, don't let your mind wander. Mind wandering is not good. It's not meditating. There's also judgments in that, as you can hear. But the basic rule is that if I'm going to be meditating, I should always have my attention on my breath. When my mind wanders, I'm breaking the rule. And if I let myself think a lot in meditation, I'm really breaking the rule. You know, it's quite a serious infraction. The nature of rules, too, then, become that we will basically punish ourselves. You know, that when we break a rule or something, we will feel much worse. And so one thing about looking at the various rules in your practice is that there probably will come out as statements of what you should be doing and statements about, I'm not doing this right, I'm not doing it correctly. And maybe you'll even have more questions. Like many meditators, when they first begin meditating, one of the main questions I have for a teacher is, am I doing it right? You know, even if they don't ask it, it's in their eyes, it's in, you know, it's in the demeanor, everything. You know, am I doing this correctly? And there's only doing something correctly if there's basically a system, you know, a system that's set up that says there's a particular way to meditate and you must follow the rules. You must try to do this practice as You say, as it's presented to the letter. So, these things, this adherence to rules, this way of doing things, is something that, of course, we've been brought up in the West, in our education and families and everything, to do. So we come to meditation and we try to do it well, and we end up finding that we're actually really struggling to continue to bring our attention back to the breath and to have it always be in the breath. And what starts to set up for many people is a certain amount of pressure, a certain amount of drivenness, a certain amount of internal struggle, self-recrimination, and all these things get set up with that simple instruction to bring your attention back to the breath whenever your mind wanders. Now, say you get that instruction, or you've had that instruction or practiced it, where whenever your mind wanders, gently bring it back to the breath. Just kind of be very kind and gentle and just lead your attention back to the breath. Now, that should solve the problem, we hope. But actually, it doesn't solve the problem, because you're given a contradictory instruction. You know, the contradiction is that you may not be able to actually gently bring your attention back to the breath, and that it's not, what is happening is that whenever you notice your mind wanders, you're still feeling, you know, you've broken a rule, you're still feeling you should bring your attention back, you still feel maybe thinking is bad or wrong or shouldn't be in your meditation, and so you tend to follow the rule of bringing your attention back, of bringing your attention back to the breath whenever your mind wanders, instead of being gentle. Gentleness gets shunted into the background. So, what I've found is that actually, I'm giving you the reasons why I don't teach mindfulness of breathing, for one thing. But what happens is that various qualities like gentleness, kindness, friendliness to yourself, don't get developed in that kind of practice in a certain way. And so from my perspective, what I often do is just start with people being gentle to themselves and sitting with being much more kind and not worry about being with the breath. And there's no contradiction. You start to find you can be lighter with yourself, easier with yourself, you meditate, if you don't have a particular thing that you're supposed to do all the time. So I'm just going to stop here for a moment, or for a little bit, and answer any questions you might have about anything I've just said. You know, I don't see that's possible. You know, that we're going to carry judgment into our meditation practice no matter what. It's just whether the judgment is going to be supported in a certain way. So, say if you're going to, say, just be gentler and kind with your thinking and allow your thinking to go on, you may have some judgments about what you're thinking about and how long it's going and how preoccupied you are with things. Then you can be kinder to your judgments around it, instead of trying to stop your judgments. I don't believe in stopping anything, actually. I don't think it's possible. Well, that's the thing, is that if thoughts and feelings are really allowed into your meditation sitting, they're no longer a problem. It's when they are considered to be, you know, not meditating and must be excluded, that there's actual conflict with it. And so, contrary to what many people believe around meditation, if you sit and you allow your thinking to go on meditation, it's actually more likely it will die down. And you'll be less caught up in your thinking than if you try to continually bring your attention back to the breath. And this has been my experience in years of teaching people. But people don't trust it at first. You don't trust something like that until you start to experience it. There are many ways I can respond to that, you know, and go into things at length. But I think what I will have to do during the day is present you with alternative definitions around some of the concepts that are often presented. And my alternative definitions are not because they suit me, but I really do believe from my study of the Pali texts and the language and what the Buddha was intending that they're actually compatible with what was meant. And so the problem with the word and the notion of effort is that actually that limb of the Eightfold Path is, I think, much better looked at as endeavor rather than effort. And that the endeavor in it is how do you basically, when something comes up that's not very wholesome, not a very healthy way of thinking or being, how are you with that in a way that it doesn't get further, that it doesn't develop into something like certain kinds of actions and things that you actually regret and that won't work out in your life? And how, on the other side, when something comes up that's very positive, a very good quality, how do you actually further that? How do you actually cultivate that? And so, taken from that angle, it's not, effort doesn't become about how much energy you have and how you're applied to doing a particular practice or instruction. It becomes more about the particular qualities that you notice about yourself and how you are with them. And so, to me, what that does is it shifts the orientation, where it's not then about trying to, be effortful and striving and staying awake and being energetic, and, you know, the contrary of drifting and falling asleep. Those two become just, you know, parts of our experience. It becomes more noticing in our experience, well, when are certain qualities such as friendliness and compassion and kindness coming up, and how do we further those? And when are certain qualities such as harshness and ill will and certain kinds of desires coming up, and how do we actually be with them so that they don't get a strong foothold? And that's another kind of question around what's going on in our experience. It directs us into noticing how we are developing certain qualities within ourselves rather than how we're doing a particular practice well or not. Part of what I'm presenting around practice, what I just said, because what I see that orients us in meditation practice, if we don't have instructions, it's, it really starts to become what we notice as certain qualities that we're developing in certain ways that we are with our experience. So if we're if you're sitting and you find that you're actually more tolerant of certain emotions and more able to be with them, more accepting and able to go with them in a certain way, and yet also not be so overwhelmed, you may find that that quality is something that carries with you and that is can be part of your whole life. It doesn't just stay within the meditation sitting. And so, to me, that kind of direction actually is a bit more, I see, relevant for our development than whether or not we can stay with the breath for so many minutes or something like that. But I'm not saying that that's what you believe. I'm just saying that. I'm just putting that contrast out. You know, the thing with the breath is when it's very easy to be aware of the breath, when you're just able to notice it without, you know, trying to push your thoughts away without struggle, then yes, it's very relaxing. It's very calming, you know, like anything else. But it's when, what I'm referring to is when awareness of the breath is taught as a practice to do all the time when you're meditating, and that when it's what it sets up is a kind of inner struggle in many people for a period of time until finally perhaps their mind or their attention just stays with the breath and then they get settled. Yeah. But still, then again, you're going to always have thoughts and feelings coming up in your meditation setting. You're always going to have something, you know, at some point or other that's going to break you out of your calm, or you move out of the calm state and you go into something more restless and agitated. Trying to go back to the breath at those times may actually just be going against your experience, the nature of what you can actually do at that time. It may not be necessarily skillful. And that's more of my orientation around meditation practice, is rather than stay with something rigid, just one instruction, to develop more flexibility, to kind of see, well, what is appropriate at any particular time my sittings. Now, how do we know that? How do we learn what is actually appropriate or skillful at any time in our sittings? The way I see it, we learn that from reflecting back on our experience. That when we look at our meditation sittings, you know, reflect back afterwards, you'll start to notice, say, how you were with certain experiences that came up. And you'll be able to discern times when you were very skillful and times when maybe you weren't so skillful. You were, you know, heavy-handed or pressured or impatient. You'll notice certain things that were coming up and how you were working with those experiences. And that's part of the whole thing around reflecting back on our sittings, is that we can learn much more about what goes on in meditation when we take some time to journal about it or reflect back after a sitting and look into a bit more of what was going on. And hopefully during the day, people may be willing to talk a bit about their sittings, and I could ask some questions, and you might get some ways of going into your meditation sittings that you haven't had before. Awareness. How does awareness develop around our experience? And in ordinary or mainstream Vipassana teachings, there's much more of a statement that mindfulness is being in the present moment, is knowing your experience as it's happening. That's how awareness is developed. What I see, though, is that that's only a partial awareness. That's often just you're aware of what you, in a sense, have selected to be aware of. You're aware of your breath because you've been trained to notice your breath. You're aware of your body at times, movements. But how aware do you become of thoughts and feelings, of things that are really changing and moving in your experience when you do that? It's a real question. And the answer I see, or a direction, is to reflect back that memory is a legitimate form of awareness. And that when you reflect back on your experience of meditating, you may find that you start to become more familiar with what goes on when you meditate. And so when you sit again, there's familiarity. And familiarity is a type of awareness. This whole process of developing awareness in this kind of approach is that by allowing thoughts and feelings to develop, you actually get to see where they go. You know, one of the problems that I think we have as human beings is that if we try to cut off our thoughts really when they happen, what starts to happen is that we only know kind of like the initial impulse, initial idea, the initial, you know, few words. We don't know where it's going. You know, we don't know what the trajectory is. And it's that trajectory, that momentum, that's actually going to keep those thoughts coming back again and again and again. So if you allow your thoughts to kind of complete themselves more and reflect back on them afterwards, you'll start to become aware of kind of how your thinking goes, you know, that you move into certain areas in your thinking. And this may seem like a lot of work, and really it's something that we do gradually over time, you know, and that is facilitated by talking about our meditation experiences and journaling, writing them down to a degree. Now, a good deal of what goes on in meditation, we don't have language for, you know. So we're at a disadvantage in writing about it or talking about it. And what tends to happen then is we borrow language. We we use language that seems to be part of the things that we've read or heard, that the words that are talked about in the community. That language only goes so far. It only kind of, you know, points to certain things, but it doesn't give full descriptions. And I'll be able to go into this more, you know, as we go into the day. But just for a simple example, is someone may use the word, you know, I had a period of time when I was, for any word, they could say, my mind felt spacious, for example. You know? And someone hearing that might think, well, okay, I understand what spaciousness is, or feeling spacious is. But what that person said and what you feel may be two completely different things. You know? So what I've done over the years is ask people to talk more in detail. Well, what was your experience of feeling spacious in that sitting? You know, could you describe it a bit more? And then the person might say, well, during that time I felt my breathing slow down a bit. I started to lose a sense of my body. I really even lost a sense of my breath. My thoughts really dissipated. And there was this kind of, you know, real sweet kind of feeling that accompanied it. Now, that's what happened that time for that person. You know, it's not that that's a description of spaciousness in some text, but it's a description of what someone experienced. And to me, those descriptions are much more reliable. They're much more honest in the sense where, because we're talking about what we knew for ourselves of what happened when we meditated. They're not descriptions that are trying to match what we think we should be experiencing. So I've actually covered really a lot of ground. I don't want to, you know, keep talking, keep going. Rather just have us sit again. And does anyone need to take a break before the sitting? Okay. So just take a couple minute break and then meditate again.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.